Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of Border Songs by Jim Lynch, narrated by Richard Poe, and directed by Neil Shaw. This book is copyrighted 2009 by Jim Lynch. This recording is copyrighted 2009 by Recorded Books. 6'8" and severely dyslexic, Brandon Vanderkool has always had an unusual perspective, which comes in handy policing a 30-mile stretch of the largely invisible border between the U.S. and Canada. Uncomfortable in this uniformed role, he indulges his passion for bird-watching, and often finds not only an astonishing variety of species, but evidence that what was once a sleepy rural hinterland is now the front line of an escalating war on drugs and terrorism. And now, Border Songs.
Part 1. Chapter 1. Everyone remembered the night Brandon Vanderkool flew across the Crawford snowfield and tackled the Prince and Princess of Nowhere. The story was so unusual and repeated so vividly so many times that it braided itself into memories along both sides of the border, to the point that you forgot you hadn't actually witnessed it yourself. The night began, like the four before it, with Brandon trying not to feel like an imposter as he scanned the fields, hillsides, and roads for people, cars, sacks, shadows, or anything else that didn't belong, doubting once again he had whatever it took to become an agent. He rolled past Tom Dunbar's dormant raspberry fields, where, in a fit of patriotism, Big Tom had built a 20-foot replica of the Statue of Liberty, which was either aging swiftly or perhaps, as the old man claimed, had been vandalized by Canadians. Brandon reluctantly waved at the Erickson brothers, who laughed and mock-saluted once they recognized him in uniform, and rattled past Dirk Hoffman's dairy, where Dirk himself stood on a wooden stepladder completing his latest reader board pot shot at the environmentalists. Mouthwash is a pesticide, too. Brandon tapped his horn politely, then swerved through semi-frozen potholes across the center line to get a cleaner look at the fringed silhouette of a red-tailed hawk. 26. The white rump of a northern flicker. 27. And suspended above everything, the boomerang shape of a solo tree swallow. 28. Brandon traversed the streets of his life now more than ever, getting paid, so it seemed, to do what he'd always loved doing, to look closely at everything, over and over again. The repetition and familiarity suited him. He'd spent all of his 23 years in these farmlands and humble towns, pinned between the mountains and the inland sea along the top of Washington State. Traveling beyond this grid had always disoriented him, especially when it involved frenzied cities twitching with neon and pigeons and bug-eyed midgets gawking up at him. A couple hours in the glassy canyons of Seattle or Vancouver would jam his circuits, jumble his words, and leave him worrying his life would end before he had a chance to understand it. Some people blamed his oddities on his dyslexia, which was so severe that one giddy pediatrician called it a gift. While he might never learn how to spell or read better than the average fourth grader, he'd always see things the rest of us couldn't. Others speculated that he was simply too large for this world, though Brandon claimed to be 6'6", because that was all the height most people could fathom. He was actually a quarter inch over 6'8". And not a spindly 6'8" either, but 232 pounds of meat and bone stacked vertically beneath a lopsided smile and a defiant wedge of hair that gave him the appearance of an unfinished sculpture. His size had always triggered unreasonable expectations. Art teachers claimed that his unusual bird paintings were as extraordinary as his body. Basketball coaches babbled about his potential until he quit hoops for good after watching that huge Indian in Cuckoo's Nest drop the ball in the hole for a giddy Jack Nicholson. Tall women fawned over his potential, too, until they heard his confusing raves and snorting laughs
Sample complete. Ready to continue?